What's up, everybody? My name is David EJ Berger. You can find me at Carl Jr. on Twitter. And welcome to Training Camp Dialed In. I'll be featuring phone calls with NFL writers and reporters from the actual sidelines of camp. Well, that's normally how this works. Obviously, things are a bit different this year, but I'll still be getting their inside knowledge about the teams they cover from a fantasy perspective. This is the place to be all month long, as I'm bringing you 3 to 4 shows per week filled with football knowledge that's going to help you win your leagues this season. So you need to subscribe to the Dynasty Happy Hour feed, the exclusive home of this super short run, super niche, yet super essential podcast for the month of August. All right. Did you hear that sweet, sweet music under the intro? Woohoo! Eddie the editor is back, baby! And Eddie, I'd like to take this moment to say thank you for coming aboard once again. We needed you. I needed you. Specifically, you were sorely missed. This is a team project. I need a teammate. So thank you for returning to your post. Wow. We've been on a roll. We've talked some Seahawks, Broncos, and Colts so far. This is episode number 4 of the season. The hashtag Brett Favre. And how appropriate. Because guess what we're talking about today? The Packers? No. Oh, the Jets. No. Well then, sheesh, what is that? It's like Wrangler jeans? That's not a football team. He played for the Vikings? Ding, 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 ding. Yes, he did play for the Vikings. Duh. Seems like a bit of a stretch. Maybe. That's right. Today we are talking about the Minnesota Vikings. And you know what I love about the Minnesota Vikings? Their mascot is very appropriate. It's cold and rugged there. It's Viking territory. It works. And today I've dialed up the one and only Arif Hassan. You can find him at Arif Hassan NFL on Twitter. He covers the Vikings for The Athletic. This is big time, people. And if you're on football Twitter, you know Arif. You love Arif. This is going to be great. Because he's going to deliver the definitive guide to the 2020 Minnesota Vikings. What are we waiting for? Let's bring him on. Ladies and gentlemen, Arif Hassan. Hello, Arif.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Thanks for joining me once again here on Training Camp Dialed In.
Yeah, no problem.
I've been kicking off the show with the thing I think we're all tired of hearing about. I'm, of course, talking about the Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, WAP video. No. Actually, I think that's probably not talked about enough. Of course, I mean COVID-19, the virus. We can't escape it. I think at this point, we've got a decent idea of how teams are handling the safety protocols. But still, I think we should take a moment here off the top to go over personnel. Who are the Vikings that have opted out and or popped up on the COVID positive list so far?
Yeah, so only one Viking has opted out. That was Michael Pierce, the nose tackle, the signing that was probably their only splash in the free agency period of the offseason. And, you know, obviously that's going to have a pretty big impact on them because they needed to replace Linval Joseph. That's a big part of the way they organize the defense. Nose tackles are pretty important. But just in terms of the players that have hit the COVID-19 reserve list, of the players that have hit it and have not come back yet, there's only Oli Udo, who is their backup tackle. Sounds like he's going to be a backup right tackle this year. I don't know, that's somebody that they're pretty high on. Other than that, either they've come back, like Justin Jefferson, for example, and there was another rookie as well, hit the COVID reserve list, but they have since tested negative twice and have returned to the team. Or like Cameron Smith, discovered because of the testing that he had a heart condition that required open heart surgery. And so as of this recording just a couple of minutes ago, actually. The Vikings have waived him with a non-football injury. They still, from my understanding, are going to pay him the full salary, but it's just something that they have to do to get him onto injured reserve from the COVID-19 reserve list. But yeah, there's only one opt-out, that's Michael Pierce, and there's only one player that's still left on the COVID-19 reserve list. The rest that have been put on there have since returned.
Well, I missed that Justin Jefferson had popped up with, and now I know that he's powered by the antibodies.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully. There is also the possibility that, you know, he was just in contact with somebody who had tested positive, and that's why he ended up on the list. Or it could even be a false positive. So, you know, maybe he's powered by the antibodies. Maybe, you know, maybe not.
We'll let science decide, I guess, Arif, not two football podcasters. obviously, this – well, thank you so much for that update. That's really good to know. And it seems like the Vikings and most of the NFL is handling this and moving forward in a very positive way, which is amazing to hear. Obviously, this is a training camp unlike any other, and it'll be a minute before you have true access to some real football practice with pads fully on and guys at it full go. That's when you'll really be able to get out there, track what's going on with the team. But the helmets are on, and guys are getting reps, at least in shorts and t-shirts. We know that. What else should fantasy gamers know about how Vikings camp has gone up until this point as we head a little bit further into training camp?
Well, it kind of depends on your fantasy format and your approach to fantasy football. If, for example, you care about kind of the construction of the offensive line, if that plays a part in your projections as a fantasy football owner, then you should know that for the most part, it looks like the Vikings will be rolling out a very similar offensive line to the one they had last year, which is not, you know, great news for people hoping to expect the greatest heights from that offense. Pat Elflein was one concern. It sounds like he's going to actually continue to be starting. We'll monitor that as that continues, but that seems to be something that's going on. And the right guard position is the one where there's an open competition between their second round pick, Aviante Collins, and Dakota Dozier. And so we'll see kind of how that goes. But that's really the biggest update we have is kind of the offensive line. And then also, if your fantasy league has points for returners, you know, people would want to keep an eye on either KJ Osborne or Justin Jefferson in their league. And both of them are competing for the punt returner spot along with Mike Hughes, who I don't expect him to win. He was a pretty poor punt returner for the Vikings last year, and they took him off that job. And Amir Abdullah, who historically has had the job both at punt and kick returner with Marcus Sherrill's out. So those are the biggest updates we've seen from the interactions that we've had with the coaches. There is a presumption, of course, that Justin Jefferson is going to start. I don't think that, you know, rocks anybody's world. I think that's the expectation. You know, I guess if you're in an IDP league and you want to pay attention to someone like Jeff Gladney or Mike Hughes or Holton Hill or whatever, it really does sound like the only starter that we've nailed on defense at that cornerback spot is Mike Hughes.
Well, fantasy is more often than not now concerned with things like offensive line, personnel, snap count. So I think that's great information. Thank you so much, Arif. What about any of these reps that we're seeing online? We're seeing the videos on Twitter. We're seeing the guys out there throwing it around. Any word about how guys are looking in that aspect? I know coaches can't even be out there for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, that's always kind of difficult to kind of divine because the videos that do get sent out are you know, kind of pre-selected by the Vikings to kind of make all of their players look good. So it is pretty difficult. I know that there's just been a very small amount of highlight video to come out. Like you said, you know, the coaches aren't even allowed out for a lot of it. And for the Vikings, they're still in the strength and conditioning phase of kind of the acclimation plan, the new acclimation plan to deal with the way that the training camp is going to be a little bit different this year. So outside of walkthroughs, we're actually not seeing a ton of genuine play from the players. So I would just be a little bit hesitant to say anything definitive based off of kind of the videos that are coming out, just because they're running a lot of these at walkthrough speed. But we do know that Jefferson is already kind of taking a bit of a heavier role in the offense. So that's something to kind of take note of.
Well, this is the fun stuff that we want to get into. The masses are salivating for fantasy points, and the Vikings seem poised to satisfy that craving. Last year, fantasy gamers were living the dream with Dalvin Cook, who finally lived up to the potential drafters have been hoping for since he entered the league with over 1,100 yards and 13 touchdowns on the ground. He buoyed this offense that was top 4 in rush attempts and 30th in pass attempts in 2019. This was reflected in how they lined up on the field as well, with the second highest percentage in both 12 and 21 personnel groupings and a league-low 25% in 11 personnel, so not a ton of three wide receiver sets, according to Sharp Football. But while this run-heavy approach did keep the total volume of plays down in Minnesota, finishing 27th in the league, this offense finished 8th in total points scored, so they were getting in the end zone, which is where fantasy gamers want their players to be. But while head coach Mike Zimmer hasn't gone anywhere, the architect of the scheme, offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski, has put himself in position to be the next head coach fired in Cleveland. Sorry, cheap shot, but I took it. So there are some questions about what this team will look like on the field this season. You know it better than anyone. Do you expect a relative repeat of 2019, or are there some new wrinkles headed our way with new offensive coordinator Gary Kubiak?
I'll say this off the top. I probably would not move Dalvin Cook too much around in the rankings based off of kind of any changes that we'll expect in the offense. But I do expect there to be offensive changes. So the first, I think, is what you mentioned, the very limited amount of 11 personnel slash three wide receiver sets. Like you said, they were dead last in the league. And what's really interesting about the statistic is they were last by an enormous margin. I think second to last was Philadelphia. So you said 25%. I've seen elsewhere 27%. By the same measures, Philadelphia was in 11 personnel about 45% of the time. And they, you know, have two really talented tight ends. They had a bunch of injuries at receiver. They just didn't have very many good receivers. They were rolling out a former quarterback there. And even they found ways to put together three wide receiver sets a little bit more often. So I think with Vikings, it was a bit of a fluke, right? Because part of it was that Adam Thielen was injured, and part of it was they really only had one other reliable receiver in Olabisi Johnson outside of obviously Stephon Diggs. And so that was part of it. Part of it was just they really liked 12 and 21 personnel. They do have two good tight ends. They like having their fullback out there. But I think with Gary Kubiak, we've seen him orchestrate a number of offenses in Baltimore and Denver, obviously Houston, and he tends to run more 11 personnel than the Vikings did last year. I expect to see a little bit more of that going forward, and I expect to see them pass the ball a little bit more, not just because you know, they may or may not be out behind in games because of the defensive turnover, although I think that'll play a role. I just think that Gary Kubiak is a little bit different than Kevin Stefanski. Stefanski was a first-year offensive coordinator that just saw the previous offensive coordinator get fired for not running the ball a lot. Now, Kubiak, he can do whatever he wants. He's got a couple of Super Bowl rings. Zimmer tends to just trust veteran coaches a lot more. I suspect that even though it'll still be a run-heavy offense, he'll throw the ball a little bit more. And the reason I wouldn't change things for Dalvin Cook in terms of rankings is, first, I still expect him to be used in the passing game. He was second in yards from scrimmage last year per game. But also, second, I think we're going to see a couple more plays every game, and that might make up for the difference in the total. And so while they're going to be throwing the ball, I think, a little bit more, I think there's just going to be a couple more plays, and I think that Dalvin Cook is going to be involved in a couple of those plays. So overall, I expect total fantasy volume to increase. And because of that, I expect to see them in the red zone, maybe not the same amount because losing Stephon Diggs hurts your offensive efficiency, but enough that I think Cook has some touchdown opportunity, maybe not 13 touchdowns, which is kind of a lot to repeat from year to year to year. But certainly within striking distance of double digit touchdowns. So I wouldn't move Cook around, but I do think the offense is going to look a lot different and it's going to play out a lot differently. But I still think that Cook can still hit the 115 yards from scrimmage a game that he beat last year.
In a season where consistency is king, the Vikings are in the enviable position of a guy who has been around long enough to expect what we are going to get in quarterback Kirk Cousins. You've mentioned that we might see an increase in pass volume, but this is a guy who normally finishes somewhere in the 4,000-yard range and between 25 to 30 touchdowns, last year, of course, being on the lower end of those benchmarks with just over 3,600 and 26 touchdowns. A lot of that has to do with his incredibly slow start in 2019. Even only attempting 10 passes in week one, sheesh. But he had some boom weeks as well during the course of the season. Should we expect the expected with Cousins this year and say, hey, like I said last year, that's not all that bad, especially in Superflex?
I think we're going to get closer to that 4,000-yard range. You know, last year, like we mentioned, you know, there was just such limited passing volume that even with a very efficient level of play from a yards per attempt perspective, from, you know, touchdowns, interceptions, and all that, you know, he was only able to get 3,600 for, I think, the first time in his career. He really is a 4,000 yard a year quarterback, but that's really just dependent on total passing volume. So I think as passing volume increases, Cousins' value in fantasy leagues increases. And then also, I just don't expect the Vikings to just immediately run out to like a 40-point lead as often without having Stephon Diggs there, which is kind of what happened in that Atlanta game. And it happened in a couple of other games where they started running the ball a lot and really early. And so I would expect Cousins to have a little bit more passing volume. Maybe even it'll look like, you know, what happened against New Orleans when they had both Thielen and Diggs. They did have to go to overtime, so he had a couple of extra plays to work with. And in that game, you know, that's the kind of fantasy quarterback that you want to have. Now, I don't think they'll have to play catch-up nearly as often like they would against, you know, high-powered offense like New Orleans. But I do think that that's just a possibility, that they're going to not be in dominant situations nearly as often and run out the game. I think that we can expect kind of a bounce back from a fantasy perspective for Cousins, even if he doesn't really have the same passing weapons that he did before. I just think that adding a receiver to replace Diggs, having a healthy Thielen, and having a defense that's, you know, got a couple more question marks, I think that's going to put more passing yardage on the table.
Increased volume for Cousins means increased volume for these wide receivers. So let's go there next. Stephon Diggs, as you mentioned, he took his elite route running skills to Buffalo, leaving his annual 100-ish targets on the table. Fantasy headliner Adam Thielen is still very much around, and for some reason, it feels like he's a bit of an afterthought when it comes to those evaded Diggs targets. And I think that's because he mostly underwhelmed drafters in 2019 in an injury-plagued season that only saw him reach 10 games and 6 touchdowns. But now that he's the clear-cut alpha, what should we expect from Thielen, a guy who can go behind more buzzy names like Tennessee Titans wide receiver A.J. Brown and Carolina Panthers wide receiver DJ Moore, depending on the draft?
Man, if he goes behind DJ Moore in a lot of these drafts, I think a lot of people are making mistakes. And I was a DJ Moore fan coming out of college, but you take a look at the situation where it might be like Teddy Bridgewater throwing to DJ Moore. Moore himself is not a very talented route runner. He's quick and he's fast, but he kind of relies on big shots, which is not what Bridgewater can provide. Versus Thielen and Cousins, Thielen averaged 100 yards a game or over 100 yards a game for the first 8 games with Cousins when they initially opened up. And so the question is, if Thielen can remain healthy, will that kind of chemistry between Thielen and Cousins sustain itself? And while I am pessimistic about Thielen's long-term capabilities, given that he's dealing with the back injury from that really phenomenal 2018 season, as well as the hamstring injury from 2019, I still think his 2020 is going to be, you know, very, very productive. I mean, this is a connection that broke Charlie Hennigan's consecutive 100-yard game, 100 yards a game record. So I think that there is a lot of volume to be had. For me, if I were to kind of estimate out the targets for Thielen, I would say 150 targets is certainly on the table for him. And I think people kind of disappointed by last year. I think it's fair to be disappointed, but I wouldn't carry those into next year because, you know, after he returned from the hamstring injury, he was still clearly, you know, hampered by that hamstring. And so even if you take a look at some of his post-injury production, it just kind of wasn't there. I would say that we're probably going to expect the Thielen, probably not the first 8 games of 2018, but something kind of closer to when he was healthy this year, and maybe an in-between point between those 2 years. I still think he's going to eat the lion's share of targets. There's just not really a proven between the 20s receiver on this roster. You can be excited about Justin Jefferson. You can be excited about Irv Smith. You can find Kyle Rudolph to be kind of a reliable player. But if you take a look at the kind of players that Kirk Cousins trusts to throw when he's on his own 20 and he needs to find a way to drive all the way down to the field, Thielen's the only one there that you know Cousins trusts in those situations. So I think he'll soak up a ton of targets. I really would kind of put him above some of these other receivers. Like A.J. Brown, I think, is remarkably talented. But if you're worried about run-dominant offenses, I mean, Tennessee is going to continue to be run-dominant, whereas the Vikings, because of their new offensive coordinator, might not be as run-dominant. So I would be shocked if Thielen underperformed DJ Moore, and I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, beat out AJ Brown. It is really kind of surprising to me where his ADP is. And I understand, you know, injury is a concern, but, you know, he hasn't been injured much throughout his career. I think there's a long-term problem with him given that he's 30, but I think for 2020, you should expect a really high volume for him.
I mean, 150 targets would be amazing, especially if you're getting him, you know, at one of these bottom end ADP positions. I love it, Arif. I love it. All right. Well, you mentioned Justin Jefferson a couple times now, and he's the Vikings' rookie wide receiver coming into the league with a lot of heat off the red hot LSU championship squad, during which he put up over 1,500 yards and 18 touchdowns. I'm personally all in on this guy. I have him pretty much on all my dynasty teams. So please go ahead and take this moment to tell me how right I was to do that, and also my thinking that he could be the top rookie wide receiver for fantasy this season is correct. I mean, obviously you don't have to do that, but it would be really great if that's how this turned out.
Well, I think for Dynasty, he's a really good buy. You know, he was my fourth favorite receiver in the draft, and he enters a situation where, you know, he's going to be one of the two clear-cut receivers to win the ball. So I think for Dynasty, that's great. I just generally don't trust rookie receivers. So if you ask me to compare him among rookie receivers, you know, I could see him, you know, making more hay than Henry Ruggs, for example, who's drafted higher but is put into a situation where the quarterback doesn't like to throw deep. I can see him kind of winning. I like him more than Jalen Reagor, for example. I could see him winning a lot. You know, I think that the weird situation in Denver makes it kind of difficult to invest in either of those rookie receivers. So there is a really good spot for him from a landing spot perspective. I don't love rookie receivers. You take a look at last year's class, it was maybe the best receiver class we've ever had from a draft prospect perspective. Since 2014 and since obviously this class, and only three of them were on pace to get 800 yards, you know, AJ McLaurin, DK Metcalf, and of course, AJ Brown, who we just mentioned. And that's just kind of the nature of things where it's very difficult for a rookie receiver to beat, you know, 800 yards. And I think if you're going to be competitive from your wide receiver two spot, you need to at least threaten 1,000. I think Jefferson can threaten 1,000, but I'm a little bit worried about him, you know, against kind of these veteran receivers in a situation where it's more difficult for rookies to acclimate because of the limited off seasons that we've had. So in a general sense, if I'm not comparing him to other rookies, I'm a little bit worried. If I am comparing him to other rookies, I really like how he translates really quickly because he came from a pro-style system that was coordinated by Joe Brady, who's had work with the Saints and is now working with the Panthers. You know, he is a really remarkable route runner who's got the ability to kind of zing himself open from the slot. He also has outside experience from 2018. And, you know, he won in ways that tend to translate into the NFL, which is why I had him as my fourth receiver. I thought he was just a really smart player that can win contested catches really well despite his size. So I really like him, especially when you compare him to other rookie receivers, especially for first-year impact. I just don't like rookie receivers in general. So take that kind of how you will.
Well, I'm going to pocket it as confirmation bias. I'll tell you, that's what I'm going to do right now, Arif.
Sure.
Okay, well, real quick, are we expecting him to be the second wide receiver in two wide receiver sets with Thielen?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't think that they would put any of their other receivers in a position to kind of win that job. I think it's his job to lose at this point, and the Vikings so far seem pretty impressed with what he's done. So I do think that he's going to be the starting receiver in two receiver sets, and I think I would probably lock that in.
Any other Vikings receivers flirting with being fantasy relevant this season?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously it depends on kind of how deep your league is, but I would pay attention to Olubisi Johnson. I think he's kind of the most likely receiver to steal snaps and targets from the other receivers on the roster. You know, last year with Thielen out, you know, he got called up a lot, and in games where he had significant snaps, he only had 20 yards a game. So obviously that's not a ton, but again, he's a rookie receiver, right? I just mentioned how much I don't like them, but I do like how they tend to develop. And for a seventh round pick, I think 20 yards a game is really impressive. Even getting onto the field, honestly, is impressive. And I think he's got kind of a lot of room to grow. And so I think he's probably in the lead to win that third wide receiver spot, which depending on how often they go into third receiver sets, you know, that's something to kind of evaluate, especially in, I think, really deep leagues. And so, you know, he's somebody that the Vikings have turned to when there's been an injury before. So if you're kind of a handcuff style drafter, that's somebody you might want to take a look at if your bench is deep enough. Otherwise, you know, you still want to pay attention to whether or not veteran Tajay Sharp can take that role. You know, he's a really smart, crafty receiver. So, you know, he's somebody that might be able to slot in right away. He's played in a similar system to the one the Vikings use right now. So he could play. Otherwise, Chad Beebe, who is an undrafted free agent, son of Don Beebe, is already competing for the punt return job alongside, you know, Jefferson and Hughes and Abdullah. He's somebody to pay attention to. You know, he's somebody that the Vikings keep on putting in positions to kind of win these jobs, The problem is, I don't think he's ever actually won these jobs. They really like his route running, which is fair, but he drops the ball a lot, and he can only be used kind of in underneath situations because he's such kind of a small receiver that doesn't have deep speed. So he's somebody to pay attention to, but I really do think that BC Johnson is going to be the one that wins that job. And it kind of depends on how often they go into three receiver sets or whether or not a player gets injured. But, you know, he's, I think, the kind of the next guy up in terms of targets at the receiver position.
Johnson was a guy who I think last year provided a little bit of upside for DFS grinders more than anybody
else. Oh, yeah,
else.
For sure. Like a $3,000 buy. Yeah, I think he did some pretty good stuff.
And Sharp was a guy who, when you watch the Titans on Red Zone and you're jumping up and down because a guy just made a big play, you're thinking it's A.J. Brown or Corey Davis, and it's Tajay Sharp. So we could see that play out in Minnesota when you're hoping for that Justin Jefferson score. That's the feeling that we kind of got.
Yeah, for sure. And I really like what he kind of brings to the table. He was a pretty good route runner at Colorado State, and it took a while to kind of get acclimated. He actually had a really slow start to camp in order to play at full speed. But once he did, you know, he took that job away from Dylan Mitchell. He took that job away from Chad Beebe. And somebody to kind of climb up the depth chart and recover from a bad start in the offseason, you know, that's somebody you always want to pay attention to.
Moving on to the running backs, there was perhaps no greater moment of the fantasy offseason than when Dalvin Cook's potential holdout hit the timeline and suddenly fantasy Twitter became NFL contract experts. They busted. I will not even attempt to Google this information to play the part here, especially since I have you, who I'm sure has a much better handle on it than most. Where are we at with Dalvin at this point in terms of a potential holdout, and what should we expect moving forward?
I think the holdout idea has died. I mean, he's reported to camp, and the Vikings are negotiating a contract seemingly in good faith with him. So it sounds like a holdout is just not in the cards at the moment. And I think this is kind of what we expected, just because the way the CBA is constructed is that if he misses training camp entirely, his contract just tolls over. It's just impossible for a player in his position to effectively hold out and have kind of a reasonable threat in terms of, you know, negotiating position. You can't really kind of repeat what, say, Le'Veon Bell tried to do with the franchise tag. And so that's going to be, I think, the state of things. I think that the Vikings are going to negotiate a contract with him, and I think he'll be ready to play week one. And I think all the indications that we have about Dalvin Cook's willingness to kind of appear and report for training camp have already essentially been resolved. So the holdout threat, I think, caught a lot of people's attention. I think a lot of people here in Minnesota, though, didn't really think that that threat was worth much. And then kind of as we've progressed forward, it really doesn't seem like it has a ton of teeth.
So we're drafting Dalvin early and often with confidence moving forward, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would say so for sure.
Okay, well, we've given him a lot of love for the ground game, but he also did chip in over 50 catches and 500 yards last year through the air as well. He raised that ceiling doing that. That's how he really reached those peak weeks. Should we expect that type of volume again?
Yeah, I think so. I think with an increase in the passing game, the Vikings do want to evolve him more as a pass-catching back. The only issue is that while he has a pretty good skill set for that, I mean, he's a good route runner, he's explosive, he does have a drops problem, which is really interesting because he didn't really have that at Florida State. But all 3 years, even in the limited time that he had his rookie season, he had a number of drops on his targets. So that's always going to kind of shake people's foundations. And also, he's just not a very good pass protector. But I think the Vikings are just all in on Dalvin Cook. And so when they do find themselves in a situation where they want to throw the ball, he's going to be out there and he's going to be a great outlet for them. I don't know that they're going to trust him with these really remarkable targets downfield, but they are going to get him the ball in outlet situations. And what's really interesting about him is that even though they don't target him deep downfield, he tends to get a decent amount of yardage on his catches. I think he led the league among running backs in yards after the catch per catch. And a lot of that's just because they're throwing him the ball behind the line of scrimmage, so he's got a lot to make up. But it does mean that he can kind of turn any opportunity of a catch into something big. And because I think they're going to pass the ball more, which again is just supposition for me, I think that his receiving upside is certainly there.
Boy, maybe we aren't high enough on Dalvin. Maybe we should be even higher. Who knows? It sounds like a lot going for him. Okay, who is the guy to draft behind Dalvin, though? A lot of guys, they do the handcuff. And in Minnesota, we have someone who I think projects as the handcuff. But are we really, truly believing in Alexander Mattison? And what about non-league winner Mike Boone, who didn't see a snap in the second half of many championship weeks last year, and saw people finish in second place.
Yeah, if you had kind of reversed the weeks that he went off, I think a lot of people would have been a little bit more happy because no one was playing anybody in week 17 where he truly, you know, gained a ton of yardage. So I'm sure it was kind of bittersweet for Mike Boone fans to kind of see him go off in week 17. But I do think that Madison is an effective handcuff. He's not somebody that you'd kind of throw in there in flex or RB3 situations if Cook is healthy. But I certainly think he takes on the majority of the load in those situations. The one game where we saw Devin Cook miss, we saw a pretty big, workload from Alexander Madison. So I do think that even though he's not explosive, you're not going to get a ton of 40-yard runs from him. You are going to get a bunch of 2 to 8 yard runs, and I think they value that kind of consistency. So we did see some pretty good play from Alexander Madison. He can catch the ball, which is also good too. And so you can kind of give him the same plays that Dalvin Cook runs with the comfort in knowing that he can also be a short yardage back, even if you don't think he's going to get like 16 yards in this reception or 20 yards in this run. He's just not that kind of guy, but he is going to probably soak up a good chunk of the volume that's going to be available in a situation where Dalvin Cook isn't healthy. I don't think he's going to take all of it. I think they're going to want to go to kind of a committee sort of approach, but I think that he is somebody who is certainly rosterable as a running back in a situation where Dalvin Cook is injured for sure.
Rounding things out, the tight ends in Minnesota are still definitely worth discussing. He's not flashy, but veteran Kyle Rudolph is always a solid weekly dart throw on this offense. And fantasy Twitter is a flutter for second-year man Irv Smith and his potential to grab some of those vacated Diggs targets. That's just a cool thing to say, too, vacated Diggs targets. How do you see things shaking out on the field between these two?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of reason to be pretty excited about Irv Smith. First, because of the vacated Diggs targets. But I think second, you take a look at the way tight ends kind of progress. They really hit their stride in year three. But tight ends that produce about as well as Irv Smith did last year generally seem to produce well overall in their career as tight ends in the NFL. And so he's done a pretty good job, I think, to establish himself as somebody worth paying attention to. The next step of whether or not he can consistently gain yardage, you know, who knows? But I think he's in a position to do that. And I think the best evidence for that is the way tight end targets went over the course of the year. The first half of the season, Kyle Rudolph was out targeting Irv Smith. Second half of the season, Irv Smith had twice as many targets as Rudolph, which is really interesting because I think Rudolph's fantasy points went up in the second half of the season because he was just getting touchdowns. But for the most part, if you take a look at what's happening between the 20s, that's a lot of Irv Smith. If you take a look at what's happening in the red zone, a lot of that's Kyle Rudolph. So if you think that touchdowns are kind of the best way to win from the tight end position, then Kyle Rudolph is probably a pretty good late draft kind of guy. I think he's still going to be a target in that area. But if you're in a PPR league or a league that rewards yards a little bit more, then I think Irv Smith is a great dart throw. I think that you can get a lot out of him because the Vikings have shown that they're willing to give him more and more responsibilities, especially because they know that they can check out of a player into another play, and they know that he can execute it because of how good he is at run blocking, something that they didn't really expect. So I would expect to see him kind of unleashed. You know, we didn't get to see his full potential last year. We didn't see him kind of run up the seam the way that he did at Alabama. We didn't get to see him do these end-around reverses the way he did at Alabama, but he's got a lot of speed. The Vikings are really comfortable with that, and then they started incorporating some of the stuff that he was good at near the end of the year, and so I expect we'll see a lot more of that. So if you're really interested in Irv Smith, I think that based off of what we've seen so far, that is interest that I think is justifiable. If you're interested in Kyle Rudolph, I gotta say I think his targets between the 20s are going to be eaten up. I don't know that he's going to get a ton more, but I do think he's still probably going to be kind of the touchdown machine we know him to be.
To bring it full circle to the beginning of the podcast, this is a team that runs a lot of two tight end sets, so these guys are going to be on the field.
Yeah, I think they will. And again, I don't think that they'll run two tight end sets nearly as often as they did last year, but because of the increased passing volume in general and the increased volume of plays that I expect, I wouldn't expect that to be actually as big of a problem. So even if they reduce the number of two tight end sets, I think just the general increased passing volume is going to make up for it from the perspective of tight end fantasy production. I think the second half of the season, Rudolph only got 3 targets a game, but Irv Smith got 6. If he continues to get 6 targets a game, I mean, that's really solid starting level quality tight end stuff from a second year player that's really young. And so I think that that's something that you can kind of trust. If they decide not to put one of those tight ends on the field, I think that You'll see Irv Smith on there between the 20s. I think they're always going to be in two or three tight end sets near the goal line, so that's not a huge issue. I expect to see Kyle Rudolph play a pretty significant role there. But I think that any drop-off that you're going to see in two tight end sets, we're going to see it being made up for an increased passing volume.
All right, we're going to get you out of here with one last question, and it's a bit of a tough one. We're going to make you put yourself out there a little bit. What is your boldest fantasy prediction for the Minnesota Vikings in 2020?
Oh, man, that's pretty interesting. Boldest. Well, I guess the boldest one that I feel like I can defend is that Adam Thielen is a top six fantasy wide receiver.
I love it, as I currently have Thielen on a couple teams. So that's
all right.
I'm into
it. Hopefully that works out then.
All right, Arif, you've said it all. Where can people find all your stuff?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Arif Hassan NFL. I don't really have any other kinds of social media, so you're going to have to follow me there. Otherwise, if you want to see my written work, you can head over to theathletic.com. And if you want to see specifically mine, theathletic.com/author/Arif-Hassan. And if you want to hear me on podcasts, I'm on Norse Code, which is a Daily Norseman podcast, and The Football Machine, which is a zone coverage football podcast. So you can find me there if you want to hear more of me talking.
And I want to say, if you're listening and you're not following Arif, you need to, because he's quite good at the Twitter machine. You are. You're very good at it.
Appreciate it.
All right. Until next year, Arif, thank you so much for coming on, and have a safe and healthy rest of your 2020.
Yeah, you too. Have a good one.
Adam Thielen, top six wide receiver. You are now dialed in.